Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 66 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's top experts. Today is all about word of mouth or referral marketing. Now, word of mouth marketing is one of the most cost-efficient and effective marketing strategies. According to HubSpot, a whopping 90% believe brand recommendations from their friends. Think about the last time that you were looking for a restaurant or a movie to watch. You ask your friends first. So that's why word of mouth marketing is so powerful. The problem is that for most businesses, referrals come in through luck or happenstance, and it's not really predictable. Not for Jason Resnick, who has built a couple of successful businesses and taught thousands of business owners to create systems that make referral a predictable source of new leads. If you're interested in that, this episode is for you. In this episode, you'll learn, first of all, how do you create systems that make referral a predictable source of new leads? Second, how can freelancers get their first client if you don't have a portfolio? And third, why you should focus on a niche. Now, I've created a growth cheat sheet with all the notes from this episode, all the actionable tips. Why take notes from this podcast when you can just download mine directly from my website? Go to growthtoday.fm/66, or you can find the link in the description of wherever you get your podcasts. Before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. This is a one-person show. I record, edit, and create all my marketing materials for this podcast in my free time. So I want to thank my sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a demand generation and ops agency. Go check them out at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT. You can also find that link in the description. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters, my early adopter Patreons, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Fabrizio Marcius from Brazil, Nicholas Vargas from Sydney, Sam Grover from New Zealand, Joseph Valenti from Quebec, Canada, Louis from Switzerland, and Anwar from Edmonton, Canada. Enough about me, let's jump into my chat with Jason. Hey everybody, I have Jason here. I'm so excited to chat with him about stuff that he's really good at, which is word of mouth. I know there's a lot of founders and marketers who's really interested in that topic, and Jason has grown a few businesses using just word of mouth, right? So how's it going, Jason? How are things with you?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And things are well. I mean, you know, all things considered, considering I have two boys under the age of three, you know, the house can be chaotic sometimes. But yeah, I mean, all things are great.
You're also running your own business, and with two boys, that must be hard.
Yes. There's no question mark at the end of that statement. Yes, it is hard. My wife and I, we both have, you know, we're freelancers, if you really want to take a 10,000 foot view of it. And so yeah, we juggle at home, you know, responsibilities and things like that, but it's what I wanted from the start, really. Like, and I discovered that really early on in my, you know, even as a teenager, and I didn't even know what that would look like, but it was just, this is what I wanted. And you know, here we are. I have it. I've reached a goal, and my real calling has been to try to help other developers and designers get to their why. I want them to realize their goals, because I don't look at me as anybody special. It's just, put in the work, I put in the effort, and I showed up, and here it is.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about your story a bit, and like, how did you get to helping developers and people like really achieve their dreams?
Yeah, so that was sort of a by accident, if you will, right? Like, when I started my career, you know, I was in college. It was the mid to late 90s. And that was really the start of the internet at that point in time. I mean, I cut my economics class and learned how to create an HTML page, right? I'm not suggesting people do that, but that's what I did. And so for me, it was like when the internet came and I was just like, oh, this is cool. Like, you know, I went as a CS major, computer science major. And so at that time it was like, you know, you write this program, you have to compile it, you You have to wait, you have to deploy it, and then you can kind of see the results. And then when the internet came and it was just like, I'm writing words on a screen and hitting refresh and seeing the instantaneous gratification there. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I went into that as my career. Like I was just, I literally in college, I had switched. I was like, okay, I had a fight with my mom because I live in New York now and grew up in New York. I wanted to go out to San Jose because that was where everything was at that time. And so she won that fight. She was, you got to get that document and I want you to walk and graduate and all that stuff. But it is what it is. And so I went into that. I went into web development. And I always loved e-commerce. I worked at Fortune 50 companies. I worked at big, large consultant firms that were essentially body shops where, you know, they contracted me out to other companies. And I also worked at small design shops, you know, boutique shops that were really niched and focused on things. You know, one I worked for that only did web design and development for flight schools, which I mean, I was like, really? Okay, that's very specific. But other one was just in the medical industry, like doctors, hospitals, societies, all of those things. And they did development and design for that. And so I really was always tied to e-commerce. I loved it. I loved it from the start, really trying to figure out, you know, the human aspect, just me internally. I love human behavior. And, you know, at the beginning, it was like, how do I get somebody to give up a credit card number, right? Like that was the problem back in the day. But now it's all different. Like, and so there's different problems and different objectives and things like that. And so I was always a developer and I flocked to things, challenging problems. And, early 2000s, one of those big consultant firms put all of their eggs in the startup basket. And I worked there for 2.5 years before I was laid off, because the whole thing collapsed in and of itself. And so they didn't need me, but I said, hey, I have a skill. Maybe this is my time to do this thing. Maybe it's my time to build a business. And it was like 18 months into it, doing it myself. I said, I need to get a job because I don't have any clients. I don't have any work. I got to pay rent, you know? And so I went back and what happened was I always look at these sort of points in time as opportunities. Like I don't look at them as failures if I can learn from them. And so what I realized was it wasn't my skill set that was the problem. It was just I didn't understand all the business aspects, contracts, marketing, sales, all of those other things that were done for me while I was sitting inside a cube someplace. Now I had to do that, right? And so I went back and essentially learned all of that. Like I talked to marketing departments. I befriended salespeople. Like I was just trying to get everything and anything that I could to better that skill for me because I knew I was going to go out again on my own. Like I just, you know, it was just in me to build my own business because my goal was to be home. Like I wanted to be, have the time, freedom, and flexibility to do things that I want to do without having to ask permission, right? Like if I just want to take off Tuesday afternoon to go outside because it's an awesome day outside. As an adult, I don't feel like I have to ask permission for that, right? So that's just my nature. And so I knew I was going to go out again on my own. And in 2010, that's when I did that. It was basically a tipping point where how I am, I wanted to have that cushion. I couldn't just do that leap of faith, if you will. Like, so I basically built up the client roster and all the projects and all that so that when I did pull the trigger and quit, like I just replaced my full-time job. I still had the work. Yeah, it was less money, but and less benefits and things like that. But it wasn't like I was just, all right, now it's 8 o'clock the next morning. What do I do? Right. And so I was at a tipping point where I was literally waking up at 6, going to work and being in work at 8, leaving work at 4:30, getting home at 5:30 or 6, having a bite to eat and then starting work all again, working until about 3 a.m. and then going to sleep for like an hour or two. Right. And so there was that tipping point in my life where I was like, okay, this is like the time, like you need to make a decision one way or the other. And it, that was the time I pulled the trigger on it. And so that was the last time I had a full-time job. Right. And so I've always been developing, and I built my business around listening to clients, listening to what they want, how they want to work, what their goals are, what's important to them, right? Like, you know, for me, I didn't start a business so that I had 12 bosses. I started a business so that, you know, I had that time freedom, right? And flexibility. That's my goal. Same thing with other founders. Like if you're a founder and you're listening to this, money might be a driving force, but what's that money? What's the actual reason for that money? What do you want to do? You want travel? You want things? You want just flexibility to work on other passion projects, whatever that thing is. And I always like to try to get that to the heart of that for all of my clients and help them achieve their goals in that way. So what happened was I built my business based off of a recurring model. Monthly contracts and things like that. And I was very much a generalist when I started out. I was doing Ruby on Rails projects, Java projects, PHP projects, WordPress projects. I was doing all of these things. And it was around 18 months of doing this, about 2 years almost, where I got burned out. I was just like chasing my tail and all this other stuff. And literally after I had asked my wife to marry me, or my then girlfriend to marry me, I said to her that I was going back to work full time because I can't do this anymore. Like, maybe it's just not for me. Like, I don't know what it is that I can't get traction on, but it's not that I wasn't getting clients. I was just emotionally drained. I was working like 16, 18 hour days and just trying to juggle the projects. And I was like, yeah, I was completely burnt. And she said to me that we'll figure it out. Because I know that that's not what you want. And I know if I know that, then you certainly know that. And for me, I was just like, that's awesome. Because she is the rock. She wants to know, like, she plans out the calendar. She, you know, she wants to know, like, you know, hey, these bills are ticked off, like everything. She wants that stability. But for me, and I knew that of her, I couldn't put her in that feast or famine cycle, right? And that's kind of where I was going again. So I had to figure it out, right? Like, I was like, if she's supporting me in this, you know, what am I doing wrong? And so I just basically spent a week at night. I wasn't sleeping anyway, but like 4 to 5 hours a night, looking at my business, analyzing things, analyzing my feelings, analyzing my clients' feelings, like all of this other stuff. And what I was doing was really just specializing my business. What I came out of that was the first time at which I niched down. And I niched down into the WordPress space, specifically WooCommerce. And it was really because my clients at the time were not in their website every day. They were e-commerce, but they weren't inside, but they wanted to manage their stuff. And so at the time, I was rolling a lot of my own Ruby on Rails CMSs and things of that nature. But they were always coming back to me like, how do I do this again? How do I do this again? Right. And so for me, it was a solution that was easy enough for me to deliver on, and for them to actually use and move forward. And so I did that. And at the time, once I started ramping up in that, and I started my first podcast and things like that, but it was funny because I hitched my wagon to WooCommerce simply by accident, because I just liked that plugin better, and then automatic acquired that. And so that I had already planted my flag there as a WooCommerce guy. And you know, referrals started coming my way. I started to see growth. I started to be able to pick and choose projects, charge what I wanted to charge, and just have different conversations in the whole thing, and became recurring at that point in time, because that's what they wanted. They wanted somebody to manage their site. They wanted to be able to add things, you know, link in inventory systems, POS systems, all of these other things. And they had me on hand as their quote unquote in-house developer to do so. But then to answer your question about how I got to where I'm at now, where I'm helping other developers and designers realize their dreams, was I was at that time charging anywhere between $1,500 and $2,000 a month. And in the WordPress space, that was unheard of. People were like, "You're charging? How do you charge those prices, right? Like WP Curve charges $59 or whatever, right?" And I said, "Well, I'm not them. I'm not doing maintenance or random tasks. I'm helping with business strategy. I'm also doing all of the things that WP Curve does, but I'm also doing all of these other things too." And so just having conversations with people, you know, online, offline, at events, meetups, and things like that, that's when I realized I can probably maybe formalize this some way. Maybe I could, you know, people were asking me if I do coaching, which I didn't do at that time, things of that nature. And then when my son was born, he's 2.5 now, so about 2 years ago, that's when I realized, like, hey, I could help other people, because I literally driving home from the hospital, I reached my goal, because I built the business to be home, to see those first steps, to hear those first words. What do I do next? Right. So for me, it was a moment in time where I was like, yeah, if I can do it, anybody can do it. It's just a matter of just putting things in place and knowing what your why is all the time, and building out systems to help support your business and know who you serve and who you don't serve. And that's what I help other developers and designers figure out.
That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I hear all the time myself from other marketers, is that they want that freedom and flexibility. And they're like, oh, I want to be a freelancer. One of the struggles is actually getting their first client, right? And you were able to do that because you built a relationship with that previous company. What's your advice to, whether that's a developer or designer or even a marketer, they want to jump into freelancing? How do you get your first client? Like, you don't have maybe a portfolio at that point.
Yeah, talk to people, find out what their problems are. One of the big things that I tell people, especially that ask me this, I say, stop talking to me and go talk to somebody that could be a client. You know, the thing that a lot of, and this is from my own experience that I see, is that most developers and designers anyway are very introverted. They don't want to talk to people, right? But there's no way you can run a business without that sort of communication, listening, hearing what people are, what problems you can solve, and how you could fill a role. And so the first thing that I did was really just look around. Like, you know, when I started my business, I would walk around the town, just the town, the local town, and see what in the windows they would put their website, right? Like what their website was. So I would literally walk around, jot down their website, and then go back to my house, sit there, look at their website. And because I was a developer, I was like, how can I help them? Right. And so what I did was at that time, it wasn't like what we have nowadays, right? Like it was very static, right? Like they didn't have much interaction. So as a developer, you can't really tell what you can solve. But what I did was I would go straight to their contact form and test out their contact form. And I would just record a quick video if they had an error, you know, what I was doing, you know, things like that. Like, hey, I can submit a blank form and goes to you, and I don't know where that goes or whatever, you know, basically break their site. But I would send them an email with the video, with the fix, and saying, hey, if you want me to fix this for you, I'd be happy to have a conversation. So a lot of that first sort of getting that first client is a hustle. You have to try to figure out how you can solve a problem for your potential clients.
I really like that. That reminds me of something that Gary Vee said in his book, Job, Job, Right Hook. It's like you want to lead with value, and you actually led with value. You're like, your site is broken. Let me fix that, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and nowadays it's actually a lot easier, because the thing is, you know, the biggest thing that social media does in the grand scheme of things is allow people to complain, right? And so one of the things that I do now, and I have done and still do to this very day, is I set up alerts on Twitter with certain brand mentions, with certain keywords that I know that people ask questions on, that I know I can solve a problem for. And I just I set an alert, pings me in my Slack channel, and then I come, if it's interesting enough, I jump into the conversation, right? One of the things that I still do client work. I will always do client work. For me, it's a way in which, how can I help somebody without doing the client work? Because times change so fast, right? But in regards to how I've shaped my business, a lot of the e-commerce space now is a lot of email marketing, but it's also behavioral marketing and personalization and, you know, all of these other things. And I hitched my wagon to Drip real early on. And they were a small company, but yet when there was a problem with the app or something like that, the support team might have been overwhelmed, and people would go to Twitter with it. And so what I did was I essentially just jumped into conversations there. I said, hey, look, this is how you solve this problem. Here's a link to their resource, or here's a link to another resource online. Or hey, I just solve it through tweets, right? And then Drip would come in 12 hours later or whatever, whenever they're monitoring, and say, oh, looks like Jason got you, right? And so I essentially became a platform specialist in that way, where now I was able to answer community questions, and I've got clients from that. So if you're just starting out, just jump into the fire hose and pick opportunities where you can provide some value, like as you said, to the conversation that somebody's having. Because if you solve a problem for somebody that they're having, then, you know, they're going to always come back to you, or they're going to refer somebody to you, or so on and so forth.
And that's probably why you can charge so much. You're like talking about how you're charging like $1,500 to $2,000 per month. It's because you're not, it seems like you don't see yourself as a developer. You see yourself as a problem solver. You're there to like solve any problems that they might have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if somebody asked me what do you do, right? Or who do you help or whatever? I say I help established online businesses get customers, get repeat customers, and create raving fans of their brand. Right? And I do that through on-site personalization, behavioral marketing, and email, right? But essentially what I'm doing is handling all their development pipeline to their website as well, you know, and tying in their ESP to that. So the problem that I'm solving for them is getting customers, getting more customers, and making the customer experience such that they're willing to refer it, they're willing to get testimonials, they're willing to come back and buy again, those sort of things. And so that's the problem. That's the gap that I fill for my clients.
When we come back in just a moment, Jason breaks down his system for getting predictable leads through word of mouth and referrals. Before we do, I just want to say a quick thanks to my sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. It is run by a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, Camille Rexton. Camille and his team helps B2B SaaS businesses streamline operations and implement new tech stacks and design ABM and demand generation strategies. If you have a problem with trying to generate demand and create new leads and try to build a predictable revenue pipeline for your B2B SaaS business, then you need to talk to Camille and the 42 Agency team. They've worked with some amazing companies like OnFleet, HubDoc, GuestLogix, FlexDay, and more. You can book a free road mapping session to talk all about how you can build that predictable revenue pipeline at 42.agency/GMT. That's FOURTW.agency/GMT. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters. If you don't like ads like this, you can get an ad-free version of this podcast for as little as $2 per episode for my early adopters. There's only 9 spots left. I've only opened up 20 spots for that special price. And you will, like I said, get the ad-free version of this podcast, but you also know who my guests are coming up. You'll be part of a private Slack group and have monthly video calls with me to talk about whatever you want. You can go to patreon.com/growtoday to help with the cost to maintain and grow this podcast. You can also find that link in the description of the show. Enough about this. Let's jump back in with my chat with Jason. I want to talk about you niching down, because you talked about when you niched down to WooCommerce for e-commerce, and also you niched down on Drip particularly, your business grew even faster right? One of the fears I hear is like, well, niching down, I might get like locked down in this thing and I shouldn't niche down. What would you say to that person that says niching down is scary?
Yeah, I mean, the fear is real. Yeah, it's a fear that I had. I didn't even know I was doing it when I did it the first time with WooCommerce. I've done it again because I saw the results of what I did, you know, by doing that. I focus now solely on WooCommerce if it's a development project or helping people with their Drip and ConvertKit accounts. So those are the platforms at which I work on. The reason why you fear that, or you feel like you're pigeonholed, if you will, is because you now somebody that's coming to you that you can do what they're asking you to do and they're willing to pay you and you might have the time to do it, but yet you're saying no, right? So like it feels a little weird, right? But here's the thing, right? So when you decide to niche down WooCommerce, and I mentioned that I didn't coin that term, people referred me as the WooCommerce guy, right? Like, so I'm easily referable because I solved a problem and this person referred me to another person that they knew had WooCommerce. Same thing with Drip and ConvertKit. And if you actually just think about the market in and of itself, right? You know, the iPhone, right? If you take the iPhone, for example, right? Apple is a behemoth electronic company. They could build TVs. They could build, you know, anything they probably want, but yet they have factories for iPhone. They stick there, right? Like they can probably build, you know, who the heck knows, like big, huge display billboards, things like that, right? But yet they stick to the iPhone. Why, right? Because that's what they're good at. That's what they're known for. They say no to those things. I don't know if they do, but you know, like that's the idea here is that when you niche down, you specialize and you become the expert in there, then you are easily referable and you can, because you are the expert, you could charge more. The reason why I was burned out, remember in the story, I was burned out because I would work on Ruby on Rails for 3 months, jump over to PHP for 6 months, jump over to Java for 3, and then now come back to Ruby on Rails. So I had to always catch up to the technology that I was working on. Similarly with projects, even if you just, if you're a website designer, right? If you always have to catch up if you're a generalist, right? But if you focus in on one thing, learn that thing in and out, and you just progress with that one thing, then you become that expert. You know that, you all know all the nuances and everything that goes along with it. And so once you're an expert, then you can command the premium rate.
It's so good. It's totally true. And that's what I'm seeing in other places too, like even marketing people. I was talking to somebody, Val Geisler. I'm not sure.
Yep.
I know Val. Yeah, so she specializes in email marketing and her day rate is just crazy and she can charge that because she's the expert, right? Essentially. I'm also curious about your system, like, you know, with referrals and word of mouth, it can seem like you're leaving it into chance sometimes, like, oh, it's kind of flaky. What is your system to making sure that's a predictable source of new clients?
You have to work it into your everyday. Meaning, here's the thing, right? And this is what I teach a lot inside of Feast, is that you have to build systems and processes, right? A process is a defined thing and a system automates that process, right? And so for me, when I first started, word of mouth seemed happenstance, chance. Like, as you said, it wasn't always consistent. It just happened like a random Wednesday. I'd get a lead coming in because somebody referred me. I was like, oh, that's awesome. But the thing is nobody is thinking of you. Your clients aren't thinking of you. Past clients are certainly not thinking of you. Leads aren't thinking of you, right? You have to spark that inspiration and that referable moment. Right. So we talked about me being the WooCommerce guy, if you will. Right. That's also sparking that inspiration because it's very easy to refer me. Like if I'm just the web guy, then I would get all sorts of leads coming in. Right. Like that just aren't good leads. But as a WooCommerce guy, then, OK, now I know somewhat at least as far as what this lead is looking for. When I decided to go heavy on the word of mouth side of things, it was real simple for me because I was communicating via email all the time to my clients, whether it was just an everyday task that I finished or a milestone in the project, a full-on launch, even past clients, you know, just kind of keeping in touch with them 30, 60, 90 days later. Just at the bottom of those milestone moment emails, having a simple PS in there to say, hey, this was awesome. I really enjoyed working on this. If you hear of anyone or know of anyone that also has a similar problem, I would love an introduction. And it's as simple as that. Because when they see that, they're like, oh, yeah, okay. Right? Like it just, but you work that into your everyday. You know, I'm not saying you do it on every single email, but when you do it on those moment emails, those milestone moment emails, the happiness email, if you will, there's that emotion there. Like, hey, if you're working with a business owner, well, they have business owner friends with similar problems. And so if they have a problem that you can solve, you're giving them that opportunity to say, hey, yeah, you might want to go talk to, you know, so-and-so because they did it for me. And so just putting that one PS at the bottom was the start of it for me.
I really like that. I think it also on the business person side, like let's say the founder, and then they're referring Jason, you to somebody else. They're kind of solving the other person's problem. So they're like, it's like a love fest, essentially.
It's exactly. Yeah, because that, and that's the thing too. Everybody loves to connect everybody else. Just think about it. Like, hey, I got a landscaper, or I got, you know, a contractor friend, or I got a mechanic, right? Like everybody loves that person, right? And loves to be able to talk about that person. But in our space, for whatever reason, online space is still a new-ish space as far as businesses go. So people don't refer, hey, I got a web guy. Like nobody talks like that, right? Like, so for me, just if you just make those opportunities that create that spark of inspiration to say, hey, look, yeah, he helped me with my ConvertKit account. I know three other people with ConvertKit accounts and they're trying to do the same thing that I am. Here you go. Here's Jason's contact information.
Do you ever do any kickbacks or any incentives to kind of fuel the referral? I'm curious.
Yeah, I haven't had a need to. I see the benefit there, and there's another side of me just from my own nature. Like, I'm like, okay, well, I'm essentially incentivizing them to send me any leads, right? And so that I don't want to deal with because I don't have the time to deal with bad leads, right? Like, I don't want bad leads. And so I was having a conversation with somebody on Twitter, and this was super smart. She said that what she does is she actually builds into her proposal an opportunity to get money back, right? And so she didn't give me any figures and stuff, but the idea was there. And so essentially what she does is, let's just say the contract's for $5,000. And she says in the contract, if you refer me and I close X number of those deals, I will give you Y amount back on your project. So for me, that is a nice way to do it, at least from a business standpoint for myself, because I'm getting the money up front. And if they are bad leads or good leads, then I'm putting the contingency on that I'm closing it. So that this way, they're more likely to give me qualified leads. So I think that's a super smart way to do it.
I'm going to try that out. That's a good advice. One other thing that you mentioned about is asking for that PS in the email during milestones. Are there any other moments in your relationship with a client when, you know, it's like, oh, this is a great time to ask because it's like converted referrals better?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes a long way with just being human, to be honest with you, and maybe not with the intent of referrals, right? Not just asking. Like I'm a big fan of if you don't ask, you don't get, right? So I do ask. I ask at various stages. I ask on weekly status emails and those launch emails and things like that. But there's an interesting human dynamic in what we do, because business owners come to me because they like a part of who I am. They like that I'm a solo business operator. They like they're dealing with me. They're not dealing with somebody else. They like, you know, the fact that I'm there for them and I make them feel comfortable in the conversations that we have in regards to the projects. So what I encourage people to do is take just think about the customer experience, right? Like, how do you make the customer feel better about working with you? Like, nobody wants to look at, you know, content and read content and edit it. And it's just boring, right? Like, nobody wants to go and click around on a site and check to make sure the links are valid. Like, that sucks, right? So how can you make that somewhat better, right? And so, you know, I had Laura Elizabeth on the show one time, and she had mentioned that one of the struggles that she got was that she couldn't get the content that she needed from her clients in order for her to build out the designs for the website. So instead, what she did as a part of her onboarding is to send them a gift card to Starbucks or a local cafe, and in the card saying, hey, look, go have coffee on me, spend about an hour, get me the things that you need to get me, and just order lunch on me or breakfast on me or whatever, right? And so she, first of all, you're not going to use that card without thinking about Laura now, right? Like, you're just not going to pull that out of your wallet and be like, oh yeah, that's for that's for that, right? But two, she then got her needs filled, right? She was able to move forward with the project. Case in point, personally for me, was I had a client a number of years back. I'm a diehard Met fan. I love baseball. I watch baseball all year round. Like, it just, that's my sport. This client, similarly, they didn't have a major league team by them. They're out in the Midwest, and they just liked it. Him and his son would go to the minor league game, right? And so we launched his website and this and that and the other. And so it was a big win. And just for me, as a thank you for allowing me to work with him and all that, I bought them two tickets to that game, to one of the games. And I just said, hey, have a night at the ballpark with your son. And it wasn't that I did that to incentivize him in any way to give me referrals. It was just me being me and thanking them for the project and the work. But he consistently gives me referrals after that. And he's, and by far the ROI on what he's done over the past several years for that. And, you know, I asked him one day, I said, you know, we haven't worked together in years. Like, you know, I'm gracious and really like super thankful that you give me good leads. I'm just curious, like, how does my name keep coming up? Like, he goes, well, it wasn't so much that you gave us tickets, but you thought about my son. And so that sits with me, right? Like, you made a night, not just for myself and going out and watching baseball and stuff, but you made a night for my son too. So he was like, that for me at a personal level was, you know, top notch. And so just thinking about, you know, being a human in the experience, like, we could so get into like tools and project management and stuck into the weeds and things like that. But if you just elevate yourself from all of that stuff and just think about like, hey, if I was a customer myself, how would I feel in my own business? And go ahead and do that. That creates those moments for inspiration and creating those memorable moments.
Man, that's so good. You're giving me so much stuff. It's funny because like I listened to one of your Ask Russ podcasts, and you talked about unexpectedly delighting your clients, and it's kind of unexpected to like, oh wow, Jason actually gave us tickets, and it's about my son. That's really how did that podcast come about? By the way, like, how long have you been doing it? And you know, I'm guessing it's gave you some name and referrals as well.
Yeah, Ask Rez podcast is funny because Living the Feast is my seasonal podcast. I've had that a lot longer. But Ask Rez is a short podcast, and people were just asking me questions. Like, and that's what the podcast is about. It's a 5 to 7 minute podcast where I just answer a question. And so it started out as an experiment. I'm pretty notorious about experimenting with my business. And so I saw Anchor.fm last year. And I said, this is easy enough for me to do an answer, right? Like, I was getting tweets or getting emails, and I was like, oh, I'm just cut and pasting a lot of the same thing over and over again. Maybe I could just do a daily podcast. And so I didn't know how long it would go. I was just like, I could do this for 30 days. But then I saw the growth, like more downloads, and people, I didn't know if people would keep asking me questions or it would be repetitive or whatever. And so I just kept going. And I did it for a full year. So that's what 261 is 261 work days in that year. So I did it Monday through Friday for a full year. I'm actually rebooting it, come January. It's going to be a little different format. It's going to be two times a week. One is the conventional Ask Rez show, but then the second one is because I get asked a lot of questions, like legal questions, tax questions, you know, things like that sort of stuff. Like, I'm not going to answer because I'm not any of those people, right? That's not my expertise. So the other show is going to be me bringing on other experts, but also it's going to be also somebody could come on, and I could coach them for 15, 20 minutes. They could come on and ask a problem, client scenario, whatever it is, and come on the show and get some backlinks and some publicity around their business as well. So that'll be rebooted come January.
I want to kind of dig a little bit more in the podcast, because I started this podcast out of my desire to learn from other marketers, and it unexpectedly got me referrals to gigs. Like, oh, you do Facebook ads for B2B SaaS, we need your help. Is that what you found with you? Like, I've calculated how much I've made in the last year just from referrals from this, and it's like well over like 40 grand just based on referrals. Like, is that what you're finding as well? Like, you're getting a lot of referrals just based on your guests.
Yeah. So what's weird is like, back in, I guess it was 2014 when I decided to go into the WordPress space, full on. Actually, it probably wasn't, it was probably earlier than that. It was probably 2013. I didn't know my place in that space at all. And so what I found was, I was just talking with another developer. He was Australian and he wanted to start a podcast, and I loved podcasts. Like, that's my medium of choice. I have two, I don't write blog posts. The podcast is my blog post. And we were just having a conversation. We're like, hey, do you want to do a podcast? We could just bring on another guest at the time. And I was just like, yeah, sure, why not? And so what we did was it was so inconsistent. It wasn't like what the podcasts are nowadays. We just literally loaded up Google Hangouts on a random day and recorded, right? But we brought on other people. We brought on a third panelist, if you will, Tom Harrigan, after a little while. And we would bring on somebody else and just geek out as developers geek out, right? And what I found from that, much like what you did, was I widened my net real, real fast, because I was talking to my colleagues. They weren't competitors, right? Like, I don't look at other developers as competitors, but they were my colleagues. And I just, in conversations with them, they understood what I did as my business. And it made them to be able to refer me work, overflow work, things that they didn't do, you know, and just widen my net and become that WooCommerce guy, if you will. So it really accelerated the growth in me sort of planting my flag, if you will. I had a conversation with Troy Dean of WP Elevation podcast. And what he said, and I believe he said this on podcasts before. So Troy, hopefully I'm not expanding the curtain there, but, what he said was, he had a conversation with a business mentor, and he said, how do you become an influencer? And how do you know you are an influencer in the space? And he said, when the top 10 influencers are talking about you. And what he did was, that was the genesis of the WP Elevation podcast, was that he invited the top WordPress influencers as guests on his show. Because then, obviously, then they are talking about his show, right? So, and he's definitely an influencer in the WordPress space and the consultancy space and things like that. So, you know, it was interesting to hear him say that. And I saw it firsthand for me and my business, and you're obviously seeing it for your business as well, is that you can plant your flag by doing podcasts. A lot of people don't see that, and they feel like, hey, I have to be extroverted and, you know, well-spoken and well-produced and all that. Look, I told you, I did it with Google Hangouts. I did it with the cell phone, you know, like microphone. It was like janky at best, like, but it worked.
That's great. That's really great. Just a couple more questions. First is, what would be your one advice to business owners? Like, what should they be doing right now to maybe grow their business or automate their business? So whatever you want to talk about in terms of a piece of advice for them.
Yeah, I mean, figure out who your ideal client is, but also figure out who your non-ideal client is. You know, for me, it's like, we all want to work with only clients that we love, but it's just not the way it is, right? Like, you got to have a certain small percentage that you don't, right? And so what I would do is I would have conversations with your ideal clients that are already in as clients of yours, and just ask them, have a 10-minute conversation, say, hey, what do you like about what I do? You know, how's your business? Is there anything that I could help you with that's outside of the project? Just find out a little bit more, a little bit deeper than the project that you are working on about them, their world, and their problems. And that goes a long way in being able to build your services in that way. You know, for me, it was when I had those conversations, they didn't want just an email every week knowing what I did. They wanted a phone call. So it wasn't that I had to add another skill. They didn't want anything, and they just wanted a phone call. And I said, all right, I don't want a phone call because that takes up time, and as a developer coming in and out of the deep focus and all that stuff, but I charge for it, right? And so if they're willing to pay for it, that's fine. And so that was my tiers at that point. It was $1,500 or $2,000 a month, and all you got in the difference was a phone call. And more people paid for the $2,000 one than the $1,500 one. And so I was just like, all right, and I would have never known that if I didn't ask, you know, and just have those quick conversations with the ideal client.
That's so good. That's a really fun, you added an extra $500 for just a weekly call. That's pretty sweet. Last question. What is your call to action to my listeners? Where do you want them to go after this episode?
Yeah, I mean, if anything resonates with you, go to res.com. That's with 3 Z's. Or find me on Twitter, res. They're also with 3 Z's. I always learn out loud. So if you really want to kind of get into the weeds of what I'm doing, what I'm failing at, what I'm good at, and things, experiments that I'm running, my newsletter is the first place that I go to for sharing that information. And you know, you can find that right on my homepage, and in exchange of your email address, I'll give you a series of five emails on how to get the best clients.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Jason. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, that's it for this episode. Wow, there's so much information there, so much actionable stuff. I just want to share my 3 key takeaways from this episode. Number one, focus on the problem and not the futures. Copywriters get this, but sometimes as freelancers and business owners, we get so caught up with the cool new features that we just built that we forget those features are meaningless if it doesn't help solve a problem or meet the need of your audience. This is a tip that Jason gives for anyone who wants to get into freelancing. Find problems and solve them for people. Number two, lead with value. I love Jason's story about giving value to business owners even before they became a client. He would go to their websites and try to break it, and then he would send a video about the problem and solution to fix it to those prospects. When you lead with value, it opens a door for a conversation that can lead to a long-term business relationship. Number three, you have to spark that inspiration for customers to refer you. Jason called this as referral moments. What are the moments in your customer's journey where they're the happiest? You can even create moments of delight, like the time when Jason sent baseball tickets to one of his clients who was a baseball fan. That one client has become his biggest source of referrals even after their contract has ended. And did I miss something? Share with me your takeaways from this episode. You can find me on Twitter at RamleyJohn. My DMs are open. Or you can email me ramley@growthtoday.fm. Before I end, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. Like I said earlier, this is me. I record, edit, and create all my marketing materials for this podcast in my free time. I want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a demand generation and ops agency. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT. That's FOURTW.agency/GMT. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters, my early adopter Patreons, Jamie from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Fabrizio Marcius from Brazil, Nicholas Vargas from Sydney, Sam Grover from New Zealand, Joseph Valenti from Quebec, Canada, Louis Nichols from Switzerland, Anwar from Edmonton, Canada. Please also support me if you've been enjoying the show. There's three easy ways to do it. First, share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn. Tell a friend about this podcast. You can go to growthtoday.fm/66 to get tweetable quotes. You can also join the Grow Today mailing list. You'll get the cheat sheet directly emailed to you. I'll also tell you who my next guests are, and you can ask questions via email. And third, support me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode for exclusive content and access. With your support, I can pay for my hosting fees, marketing tools, and finally get someone to help edit this show. With your help, I can continue to find amazing experts for this show. Anyway, other than that, as always, keep on growing. Passion, 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 passion.